For the introduction, my name is Chaz Schmid, and I'll be talking about some of the potassium work that we've been working on since 2012. So potassium is the second most abundant element used in plants, but it's not found in any of the structural components. Some of the functions in plants include water relations, osmotic regulation. It's also used in carbohydrate formation and protein formation, and it also plays a role in enzymatic activity. And for all you athletes out there, if you ever get dehydrated, the recommendation is to eat a banana because it's high in potassium. Although the function is not the same in plants, you can think of it a similar way, that it's helping with the water regulation and limiting the drought stress. So some of the benefits that have been observed are heat and cold tolerance, as well as drought tolerance and wear tolerance. But the amount of research on annual bluegrass, specifically 100% stands of annual bluegrass, is limited. So the objective of the studies were to determine whether potassium source or rate influenced annual bluegrass growth and quality. We also wanted to determine what effect, if any, potassium has on anthracnose severity. And finally, we wanted to establish potassium sufficiency ranges for annual bluegrass turf based on soil tests, tissue concentrations, anthracnose severity, and overall turf performance. Due to our limited time, I'm just going to focus on the third objective here, establishing sufficiency ranges. Our research was conducted at Hort Farm 2 in North Brunswick, New Jersey, on an annual bluegrass putting green turf that was triplex mowed daily at 2.8 millimeters. The soil type for this site was a Nixon sandy loam with a sand top dressing layer between 6 and 7 centimeters. The initial mat K level was in the very low range at 20 milligrams per kilogram, and the underlying soil below that had a moderate level of 75 milligrams per kilogram. The management for this area, urea was applied biweekly at 4.9 kilograms per hectare for a 32-week period. Our irrigation was applied to mimic golf courses in the moderately dry conditions. Sand top dressing was applied at a rate of 0.15 liters per meter every 14 days. Trinex pack ethyl was applied at the label rate every 7 days, and ethyphon was applied at the label rate 3 times in the spring to control seed heads. We did apply pesticides to control other pests such as dollar spot, brown patch, and summer patch. However, these fungicides were not effective on anthracnose. The experimental design for this study was a randomized complete block design with 4 replications. Within the study, we had a factorial built into it. It was a 2x4 factorial with 2 potassium sources applied at 4 rates. Our 2 sources were potassium sulfate and potassium chloride, and our rates were 0, 54, 109, and 219 kilograms of K per hectare annually. We also included potassium nitrate and potassium carbonate at the higher label rate annually to see how those influenced annual bluegrass growth and disease severity. And finally, the treatments were applied biweekly after our urea application from May through November. Data collection for this study, we collected anthracnose severity using the line intersect grid count method. Pictured on the right is our grid. We have 274 intersects, so we looked at each intersect and determined whether disease was under that intersect, and then we could divide that by the total number of intersects to get our percent disease. The data was then converted to the area under disease progress curve, which is a quantitative measurement of disease severity over a season. We also collected soil tests to look at Malic 3 soil test K levels. We also collected leaf tissue to analyze for the tissue K content. We also took visual ratings such as quality and color, and then chlorophyll index and NDVI. Of the parameters that we measured, anthracnose severity was the most responsive to both soil and tissue data. So for the rest of this talk, I will be only focusing on the anthracnose data. Just a little bit on our soil sampling procedures. We kind of have an interesting profile. We've got a mat region built up at the top and an underlying soil below. Most of our roots in our annual bluegrass, if we're lucky, are in that mat region, and we're barely getting into the soil. So we're mainly focused on that mat region, and that's where our deficiency in potassium is, and that's where our plant roots are growing. So for the rest of the study, we're just going to focus on that mat region and disregard the soil below it. So on to some data analysis. Our AUDPC data was compared to our soil test K levels and our tissue K levels using nonlinear regression models to determine critical levels. We used two different plateau models to determine these levels. We used a linear plateau and a quadratic plateau. Pictured on the right are examples of those models. And you have a joint where it switches from the linear or quadratic shape of the curve to a plateau, and those are used as the critical levels for those models. And then also we use the Kate-Nelson graphical procedure shown below here. And this is basically, you want to maximize your number of data points within your positive quadrants, which are diagonal from each other, and minimize your data points in the negative quadrants here. So basically we're doing a chi-square. I also like to mention, of these data analysis techniques, the Kate-Nelson model is typically considered to be the most conservative, whereas the linear plateau and the quadratic plateau are tend to be overestimate the critical levels for these nutrients. So now we'll move on to some results. This is a graph of our AUDPC data versus our soil test K in 2013. So on the y-axis, we have our AUDPC data, and across the bottom, we have our Malic 3 soil test K levels. And the general trend that we are seeing is at lower soil test K levels, we are seeing increased disease severity compared to higher soil test K levels, where we've seen a decrease in disease. You can also see there's kind of a plateau on the bottom here, where we're not seeing any increase from additional potassium in the soil. So this is some of our nonlinear regression data here. On the top, we have our 2012 data. On the bottom is 2013. And then across the top is our different nonlinear regression models. As you can see, we get fairly good R-squared for the data in both years. 2013 was a little bit stronger. And we also get a range of critical levels ranging from 42 all the way up to 79 milligrams per kilogram for soil K. And because the Kate-Nelson model is the most conservative of these three, we use that to set the lower limit for our soil potassium because it's more conservative. So for the 2 years, I will show you the Kate-Nelson model for these data points. So here's our 2012 data. Once again, AUDPC on the y-axis over our Malic 3 soil test K level. The dark filled-in spot will be the one outlier in this data set. And you can see we've got a relatively high R-squared with a critical level of 42.7 milligrams per kilogram. If we look at the 2013 data, once again, very similar. We have good fit to it, although you'll see we have a little bit more disease severity. Our numbers are quite a bit higher for disease. And once again, we had no outliers in this data set. Relatively high R-squared with a critical level of 49.3 milligrams per kilogram. So now we'll move on to some of our tissue data. This is our AUDPC data compared to our average tissue K content in 2012. Once again, we are seeing our lower soil K contents having increased disease compared to our higher tissue K contents listed on the bottom here. Once again, we applied our nonlinear regression models to this analysis. On top is our 2012 and below is our 2013 data. Once again, we got relatively high R-squareds for all of our data points, and we had a range of critical values ranging from 1.9 all the way up to 3.35. So once again, the Kate-Nelson is the most conservative of these models. We're using this to set the lower level or the lower end of our critical level, and I'll show you these two data sets for 2012 and 2013. So here's our 2012 data. You can see once again, we did have one outlier in the data set. However, that's pretty good. Normally you see two or three outliers when you're doing this type of analysis. We got a relatively high R-squared of 0.72, and our critical level was at 19.6 grams per kilogram. If we look at our 2013 data, once again, we have increased disease severity compared to 2012. We have no outliers in this data set and a relatively good R-squared. Our critical level was similar to the previous year at about 19.4 grams per kilogram. So finally, we wanted to look at our soil test K and compare that to our tissue K content to see the relationship between the two. And as you can see, we have somewhat of a linear relationship, maybe a quadratic relationship, and then we're seeing a plateau at the top where increasing soil K is not increasing our tissue K content. So for time, I'm just going to show you one of these dates. This was taken the 20th of June, 2013. So we have our models on the left. This time I included a linear and quadratic model, as well as our nonlinear regression models. We got relatively good R-squared for all of them, except for our linear model. We also got a range of critical values, and as well as our plateau, which signifies our maximum soil tissue that we were seeing. And because the quadratic plateau was the least conservative of the three, we want to use this model to show our maximum soil tissue and maximum soil K levels in there so we can set the upper end of our optimum range. So we're looking at the same date. This is the 20th of June, 2013. This is the quadratic plateau model that we saw before. And as you can see, we're seeing an increase in soil potassium and tissue potassium up to about 100 milligrams per kilogram. And then beyond that, any addition of any increase in soil K is not increasing the amount of tissue K that we are seeing. So it's at this point that we're not seeing any added benefit from adding more potassium into the soil. So we just summarized all the dates that we analyzed. Our maximum tissue K, or our plateau in 2013, ranged from about 27 to 28 grams per kilogram, with the soil Malic-3 soil test K levels ranging from 74 to 103 milligrams per kilogram. So those are what we're using for our upper range and our optimum range. So in conclusion, our optimum Malic-3 soil test K for annual bluegrass turf is from 50 to 100 milligrams per kilogram. And this is very similar to the medium range suggested by Carroll et al. In Turfgrass Soil Fertility textbook. So this is in agreement with that. Going above that range is not going to show any added value or any added benefit to the turf, so that's just wasting money applying the fertilizer beyond there. Our optimum tissue K content for annual bluegrass turf ranged from 20 to 27 grams per kilogram. And that's kind of a range that is also congruent with what is seen in the literature. So our data suggests that both tissue and soil test K can be used to determine if K fertilization is required. And finally, we collected a third year of data this year. We're continuing to analyze that data and try to refine our optimum ranges a little bit more. So with that, I'd like to thank the following individuals and the generous funding organizations for their support. And if there's any time left, I'd like to open up for questions.
We do have time for questions.
I sold that.
Chad, great work. If you had to, so when I go back to Wisconsin and talk to the superintendent about this, if I had to tell them one or the other tissue test or soil test, which one should I choose?
Okay, so the question was, what's the preferred method, soil testing or tissue testing? So the most standard one used and most labs do is soil testing, and that's the one that's most commonly used. So I would suggest soil testing, although tissue testing is a little bit easier. You could just mow green, go out, grab a handful of clippings, and put it in a bag, send it out. So tissue testing might be a little bit easier, although the lab analysis is probably more common for soil data. So currently, we suggest the soil tissue data, or soil data, excuse me.
Maybe to follow on that, you think that soil tests and tissue tests have equal weight for predicting anthracnose for all horses?
The question is whether soil and tissue tests would equally, can you say that again? Can you phrase that again?
Well, this is one soil test. We have a bunch of
Yes, correct.
Is soil testing going to work? Is that range going to work better or worse than the tissue range?
Yeah, so, you know, the variations in soil could have a big effect on your soil K levels. You know, we've got that native soil below, so that's probably limiting a lot of the potassium that's leaching out of the profile. So in some cases, the tissue test might be better and more universal across sites.
One more quick question. Did you see any potassium chloride burning?
The question is, do we see any potassium chloride burning? So it's interesting that you say that. Of the sources, I would say that the potassium chloride had the lowest quality, although it wasn't different on many dates. It was a few dates where it decreased. So we saw a little bit of yellowing from the potassium chloride, but after a rainfall or heavy irrigation event, that yellowing would decrease quite rapidly. So,
thanks,
thank you.
Sir.